Welcome to Bobby Osinski Inner Circle. I'm Bobby Osinski, and this is a show all about music, music production, and the music business. My guest this week is music contractor Deb Chase. But let's start here. Analytics platform ChartCypher has released its latest report looking at Billboard's Hot 100's three charts over 2023. These include streaming songs, radio songs, and digital song sales charts. What they're trying to find was a typical lyrical makeup of hit songs. As you'd expect, love, whether it was good or bad, was the leading theme last year on each of the surveys that contributed to the Hot 100, with around 51% of all songs. And as you'd also expect, the love theme has about the same number of songs on the charts over the past 5 years. Songs about partying came next, although these have been on decline since 2019, except for radio, where there are more party hits from 2022 to 2023. To everyone's surprise, cynicism was the third major theme. Hits with cynical lyrics increased from a 43% share in 2022 to 52% in 2023. Does all this mean that you should be writing songs using these three categories? No, but lyrics about love and partying have been around since the beginning of song. Cynicism is a new one, though, and reflects the mood of society. It's all about how you feel that will naturally come out. If you have any comments or questions, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. You can find out all about my books, including The Mixing Engineer's Handbook, Recording Engineer's Handbook, AI for Music Production, The Music Business Advice Book, and more at bobbyosinski.com. There you can also read excerpts from all of my books and learn all about the latest in music, audio, and production news when you sign up for my newsletter. That's bobbyosinski.com. About a year ago, the iconic synthesizer manufacturer Moog Music was acquired by InMusic, and everyone held their breath to see what would happen next. InMusic also owns Akai, Alesis, BFD, Denon, M-Audio, Marantz, Rain, Newmark, and many more music and music-related companies, and you can't say that any of them got stronger after their acquisition. Same with Moog. Immediately after the acquisition, there's a whole round of layoffs. Then the company moved out of its longtime factory building in Asheville, North Carolina. Now it's closing its beloved Moog factory store, its on-site retail space. More than just a store, it was a place to learn all about Moog instruments and their capabilities firsthand, as free presentations were offered twice a day. Now you can take a virtual tour of how the store used to be, which is about all that's left. Moog Music was unique in that it was owned by its employees. Hopefully they made some money when the company was acquired, since it will now likely go the way of most InMusic other companies and become irrelevant. That's such a shame for an iconic brand. My guest this week is Deb Chase, who's a contractor for musicians playing on movies and television scores and acting in them as well. Deb came into the business almost accidentally, but she found that she really had a knack for it as she learned under an old school mentor before going out on her own. Deb has contracted musicians for everything from American Idol to the Soul Train Awards to the Grammy telecasts to orchestral players for live performances with Aretha Franklin and James Brown. During her interview, Deb talked about how she became a contractor, the importance of contractors to professional musicians, how shows sometimes hire based on the look of musicians, the paperwork required by the musicians' union, and much more. Get ready to learn about a whole musical world that you probably weren't aware of. I spoke with Deb via Zoom from her office in Los Angeles. I've heard from a couple of people what you do, but I want to hear it from you. Describe what you do.
Okay, I'm a music contractor. I do musician contracts for television, for sound recording, for motion picture, and I, you know, represent them with the American Federation of Musicians, the AFMM. So it's a union situation for, so, you know, to make sure all their union contracts are done correctly, all the union rules are followed on set or on site, and that's pretty much it.
Okay, so how did you get to doing this?
Oh man, it is such a long story. I actually originally moved to Los Angeles to be a comedian. I thought that, I thought it was funny. But, things changed and I took a break and then just kind of got into the business end of it instead. And I started managing a club in Los Angeles, comedy club. And that kind of panned out. And I was, I had a friend through comedy that worked for a music management company. And she thought she could get me on with an artist as a tour manager, which I interviewed with the artist, got the job, but the tour wasn't going to start right away. So I waited and waited and waited, and then the tour ended up getting canceled. So my friend felt badly. So she had moved to another company, and she's working for a music publishing company, and the owners also owned a recording studio. So I was without work, and so I was temping as a phone receptionist at the recording studio while I was looking for a regular job. And I met a music contractor and I helped her out in a situation. She had a recording session going, which she was also playing in. And then she had to get information to some other musicians for another session that night somewhere else. So I was getting a hold of the musicians for her while she was playing in her session. And, one of the musicians, she had a wrong number for. And at the time, I didn't know anything about musicians or the union. So I saw a union book in the studio, and it had a directory. So I found that musician's number, and I gave him a call, and he got the message. And so I told her afterwards that, this is the correct number, and, you had a wrong number. And she said, you took the initiative to do that when it's not your job? I said, sure. And she said, I don't know what. I need to hire you. I don't know what I'm going to have you do, but call me. And I said, sure, I'll call you. And because I only have two weeks left on this job, it's just a temp job. So I did, and she hired me, and I worked for her for several years as her assistant. She was an arranger, a conductor, a musician, and a contractor. So she was quite busy in recording. We did mostly audio recording at the time. And through her, I met another contractor who was doing mostly television. So I kind of worked for both of them at a point. And then finally he said, the television contractor said, hey, why don't you join the union? And then that way production can pay you and I'll keep you on the retainer part-time. And I said, great. He said, but you have to quit the other one. So I did. And then I've done that ever since. And that was in the 90s. And then about 10 years ago, I went out and started contracting on my own. So here I am.
So you've been doing this a long time, obviously. How do you get your work? I'm sure that there's a bunch of people that you know that call you regularly, but do you get calls out of the blue?
The best way to do it, most contractors get their work because they'll contract for specific music directors, specific composers that know them. And then, as those artists and get their work, we get our work. So that's a lot of it.
Do you always hire the same people or do you do it based on the type of sessions?
It's based on the type of sessions. Occasionally you'll get where you have the same musicians. For instance, if I'm booking a TV show, like, I worked on American Idol for a season. From the time they started having a live band through the 15th season of the original show. And so you have the same musicians in the rhythm section that play every week. And then we would switch up horns and strings and that. We tried to mix it up and give a lot of different people work. So we didn't have the same ones every week.
Also, I bet a little bit different sound as well, which might be good in my mind.
Absolutely. That, like I said, most of the time I work with specific rhythm sections or specific music directors. And a lot of them will switch up their musicians, but they do have a core group that they use and they do switch it up based on the sound that they're, that they're going for. Well, especially with the genre, because there's such variety, I may go from the Soul Train Awards to the Grammys, so you've got to have the diversity and a large contact book of musicians. So.
Is there one particular genre that's more difficult to find people than others?
Believe it or not, a lot of times I think jazz is because it's got a certain feel to it, you know, and especially if you want to, you know, if the music isn't written, you've got that certain thing. So sometimes that can be tough. I'm also on the board of the Pacific Jazz Orchestra, which is a new orchestra for Los Angeles that is, you know, we've started doing concerts, and I don't know if you've heard of them or seen them, but it's a new orchestra that, you know, native to Los Angeles. So we're out there trying to spread jazz.
Very cool. Yeah, do it before it dies.
Right. You know? Right. Yeah. So that can be tough. And a lot of times you get, especially with these a lot of times with string players and horn players, you know, a lot of them have orchestral backgrounds, you know, so sometimes it's a little tough for some of them to switch over. But I find that the younger musicians are more versatile, seem to be more versatile in the styles and genres to play anything.
Yeah, it's funny because younger musicians have grown up, for instance, they have no problems playing to a click, where older musicians
right.
did at one point in time, or playing the loops or anything like that. That, you know,
right, and they sight read, so they pick it up right away, and so, you know, so they're used to that. Where, you know, some of the older musicians have had to transition into that, you know, and it can be a little harder.
Yeah, what's the toughest thing for you to do? Toughest part of your job?
I think really, believe it or not, the toughest part for me is when productions get very specific about a look, you know, about the musicians that they hire. They'll want a certain look in the, you know, and I've had a show one time, they wanted 25 young women, dark hair, certain height, certain size, you know, and, you know, to me, I would hope that they'd be more concerned about sound than the look. So that gets frustrating if a production company gets too specific with, you know, a certain look that they want and, you know, trying to fit that in. Or on the other hand, I've had where I did a show where they wanted a 20-piece string orchestra, all under 15.
Oh.
You know, they wanted them to be able to play and pre-record the music and then finger sync for the televised version with no stands in front of them.
Oh.
You know, and So we actually did it. We found I called a lot of string players that I knew that were teachers and said, give me your best students.
Yeah.
And it worked out really well.
I just had a conductor, John Jasensky, on about 3 or 4 episodes ago. And he was telling me that he never has a problem with orchestras all over the world when he goes around, except for once when the contractor gave him a student band. And he knew within the first 5 minutes it wasn't going to work, so he just made it a workshop, a master class for them.
Yeah, which is great that he adjusted that way, because, you know, that and that helps them to learn, and so the next time they'll be more prepared.
Yeah,
but yeah, for a contract to do that without without the notice.
So what you're doing is primarily for television, then, right? And film.
Mostly I work in television.
Do you ever do anything for live?
Live performance I do as well. I've done concerts. When I worked with another contractor, we booked a lot of the, like if Aretha Franklin was in town, or even back in the day of James Brown, you know, we would get all their musicians for performances at the Greek or where, you know, wherever they were performing. So did a lot of that. I've done a lot of live shows. Democratic National Convention we did one time, you know, just a variety of television, award shows and game shows and, you know, you name it.
I always thought that it was the MD that contracted out on
well, you know,
like
what?
That.
A lot of times the MD they'll request specific players, and then they'll just say, oh, you fill in the rest. I want, you know, this person, you fill in the rest. You know, so that happens a lot.
Of course, you do the contracts and everything, right?
Right. And they all have to be in the union. And, you know, and if not, they have to join, because usually the networks are contracted to the union to use union players. So
you don't have to name the project, but what was the worst one that you ever worked on? The circumstances,
the worst one was, like I said, it was the one I referenced before, which came to mind with being a tough one, because they wanted 25 female musicians, a certain size, a certain age. And then we hired them. Now, mind you, they weren't even going to be playing. The music was already, we had pre-recorded the music with an actual, you know, separate orchestra. For the look on television, they wanted this. So we got all the musicians, and as soon as we get into rehearsal, they have wardrobe department outfitting them. So they have them in these Victorian dresses, hence the size. They had to be a certain size to fit in the wardrobe that they had. And then they put on costume masks, like the old party, you know, Victorian party kind of. So you couldn't see their face. So we didn't know, we were trying to figure out, well, why did they all have to have dark hair?
Yeah,
you know?
Right.
And then for the actual shot that they were performing in, they were behind a wall of fire. So you couldn't see them anyway. So you couldn't see them unless you knew that they were there. The audience could not see them. So that was the worst. And they did a lot of things like that. We would pre-record music. And this was a weekly show. We would pre-record music every week, just random group of songs. And mind you, we would use different orchestras for every show, you know, just trying to get people working, you know, just spread the work around. And I should say not for every show, but for every recording session. But the music we were recording, pre-recording, they didn't know what specific show they were going to put it in. It was just based on what contestant could do the key, you know, this or that. And then so they ended up spending a lot of money, because union rules, if whoever played on that music that's in that show gets paid for that show. So we may have five different orchestras that they use music for in the one show. So, you know, they're paying 90 people instead of 30, you know, or whatever. But yeah, that was very interesting, you know, show to work on.
I guess the paperwork is pretty intense on something like that.
It can be. It definitely can be. The most intensive paperwork I've ever had to do was, at one time, Vegas casinos wanted to use music from American Idol in their slot machines. So for different contestants would sing. And so going back and through all the contracts to find out who played on what. And initially, they had gone to the union to do it. And the union took all the names, you know, from every show and put them in the contract. Well, a lot of times you have guest musicians who weren't playing on those songs with the contestants. You can't pay them for, you know, that. So I had to literally go through every single contract to find, you know, which musicians played on which songs. Because they had a song list. They probably had about 100 songs. So, and they were just random episodes. So I had to go back through every single episode.
So you're a casting director in some sense, because you're also hiring the people that are going to be on camera.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a lot of that. Because they do. A lot of times, you know, shows will want a certain look for certain artists, you know. You know, sometimes they want all women. Sometimes they want all men. Sometimes, you know, just a mixture of whatever, and you know, I have to fill that request. So
do you have like an A team for that? I mean, obviously it would be, well, maybe it's not obvious, but it seems like it'd be different musicians if they're going to be on camera rather than the ones that are going to be doing the pre-records.
Yeah, we usually try to, you know, like in most contractors I know, and I think it's the same way for television, we have a core group of musicians that we use on various shows. And we also, through the years, have learned, you know, the best players, who's the best players and who's, you know. And you also have a lot of times you have musicians that don't want to do television. You know, a lot of motion picture musicians don't want to play on television. So you get that too. So you learn over the years. Contracting is something that would be hard to do if you don't already have knowledge or of musicians, specific musicians in whatever community that you're in, because it would be hard to just, unless you were just filling a request of a producer who already, just do their contracts. They're just worried about the paperwork rather than the actual musicianship.
Okay, you hit on something just before about there are many musicians that do film that don't want to do television. Do they feel it's beneath them?
I think so. I think some of them do. I think some of them do. But and then I've also had where, there was a time where a lot of film scoring was going out of town or going to Europe, because of the, it's less expensive to do a score. And I remember at it, there was one time where there were a lot of those musicians that would not, said that they would never do television, were calling to say, hey, give me a call for your show, I'd love to do it. But it's everybody has their choice, and I can understand it if they don't want to play a certain type of music or if they don't feel that they play it well. So it can be a lot of things.
With so much being done with samples and loops and things like that these days, I would imagine that's hurt what you do and not as many shows, I suppose.
It has, and work is slowing down. The number of shows and opportunities for live musicians seems to be getting smaller and smaller. So, but a lot of musicians are getting more into programming. They're learning how to program and do that so that they can be a part of that because we can do that through the union as well. So, but it is getting difficult. Music is slowing down.
I remember I was working on a record, maybe, 2002, 2003, where there was actually, it wasn't a record, it was something for a film. It was a film score. And I was engineering, and the producer brought in one of the top session people, drummer, to program everything. He never touched a drumstick, he was just programming.
It's amazing. It's amazing. But like I said, there are a lot of musicians that are catching on and getting very versatile with getting in the studio.
Yeah.
You kind of have to.
What's the most fun for you to do?
You know what? I love live television. I would, it the pace is faster. There's no room for error, so everybody's on their A game. And I think if more shows were live, I think a lot of production companies would find that it's less expensive because, you don't have time to tape and retape and pre-record and do all these, do these things when you're taping a show. Just in time, it's much quicker. So, but I love the aspect of live television that anything could happen.
Is there a mistake, or in your view, something that a producer does that makes your job harder? Or isn't it, maybe they're not aware of that you can do for them?
I think what you said the last was what we can do for them, and a lot of times, scheduling. Especially with unions, the way they schedule. Now, I know it gets difficult for them because they're dealing with so many different unions and the hours and, when does overtime kick in and that kind of thing. But a lot of times, especially with television, is you can't split the orchestra. So if you have to call one musician in outside of the schedule that the rest of, you have to pay the whole orchestra for
Wow.
that. And a lot of producers don't, they don't realize that. And then, we have to just remind them, hey, if you're calling in this person or this, these five people, everyone's getting paid for those hours. If you need help with the schedule, just, I'm happy to help you with the schedule. I'm not trying to take, food off the table for a musician, but I think a lot of times that's what happens in production gets frustrated with the union because of the cost, but they themselves can cut the cost by when we work together.
Do you go to the sessions that you contract?
Yes. Yeah. Because I go, well, all contractors should go to your sessions because you're dealing with time and overtime and are the musicians getting their breaks and when they're supposed to and are, if there's any questions, if production needs to add someone really quick, hey, we for this song we decided we wanted another drummer. Okay, well, I'll make some calls and get someone here. Because I've had that a lot, especially on live television, where they've decided, hey, we need this, or that. And just, I've had musicians just really, really go out of their way to get to a session.
Do they get paid extra for something that's last minute like that?
No, they don't get paid extra, but if it's something that it's just them, say for instance, they, if they say production says, oh, we want a guitar player to play solo with this artist, well, they'll get paid double scale for being solo.
Yeah, that's nice. Okay.
Yeah.
What's the one thing that you do that you wish everybody knew?
You know what? A lot of times, I don't think musicians realize how hard we fight for them and fight for the money for them. And I think if they did, I think a lot of times musicians think that contracting is easy. All you got to do is call people, just call them in. And it's not that. Our job starts weeks before the actual session because we're dealing with budget. We get a budget for the production and negotiating that, and how. I recently had to do a budget for a show. It was a live show, but then they were going to also record it for, they were going to tape it for television, and they were going to use the music for a sound recording for an album. Well, that's three different uses. So it's going to be, it's they're all the rates are different, for live versus television versus sound recording. So budgeting all that out, and at first they excuse me, at first they wanted 60 piece orchestra, and then knowing the cost, it drops to 30 piece orchestra, and things like that. And I don't think musicians re a lot of times realize that that's the kind of things that we do before that we even make a phone call, and then dealing with the contracts after. And for instance, if a television show is repeated, we have to be able to do a new contract, for residual payments for the musicians.
Yeah.
Or if it, I just recently had a couple shows that different shows and different artists that used the recordings from the television show on their albums. Well, of course, they're not going to say anything, but it came to my attention where I had to notify the union so we can get payments for the musicians for the new use.
How much do musicians know about their contracts or about what they should be getting paid?
It varies. Some know everything. They count every dime, and some have no clue. Some just have no clue, but they don't care. As long as they're working, they're happy. It's just like, I trust you that you're getting the money that I deserve, or that I made. But there are a lot that are aware, especially, and I hate to be it to be an age thing, but especially the older ones. The older ones know, they're very aware of the money and the new uses and how it works, and should they be getting residual payments for this or that, all the fun different funds that we have, so they're more aware. The younger ones, they just want to work. They just want to make a living in music, with their love for music. That's all they want to do.
Okay, so how would you find new musicians? And I suppose that there are some that are retiring, so you have to fill in what you're losing there or
Yeah, a lot from recommendations from other musicians. They may have some friends. Sometimes it's a musician's one of their students, that they feel is a great musician. And I was really lucky coming up, learning the business with a contractor that took chances and loved finding new musicians. And because a lot of contractors, they stick with the same people. There's that, same group of musicians that they use for everything. But the way I was taught was, just to mix it up and just find musicians. I know one time for a show, we need someone who could play pedal steel and also mandolin. And we needed someone young. We had mandolin, we had people that could do that, but didn't fit what the production was looking for. So we literally went on Craigslist and looking for musicians looking for work. And we found this guy's site, and we went to his site. We listened to a couple of his recordings, his pictures, everything. We gave him a call and said, we're interested in, we saw your ad in Craigslist and we're interested in getting you, giving you an opportunity. And he was like, okay, well, we're saying, can you do this? Can you do that? And he's answering the question. And then finally, before we hung up, he asked, he's like, what is this for? And I said, it's for American Idol. And he goes, and so what I didn't know was he had just moved into the Los Angeles area. And that was the first call he had gotten for work. So he thought it was his friends playing a joke on him that he's getting this call. I said, he goes, really? And then I told my boss, and it's like, he doesn't believe us. So we sent him, we sent him all the schedule and all the information, the official American Idol schedule. So it had all the information on it for him. So that was great. And when we used him ever since and still do to this day. So, but we were lucky because he was an excellent musician.
What's the most difficult instrument for you to find?
Ooh, I've got a story. It was a didgeridoo. We needed for a show. And at the time I was working for another contractor and who was also, he played wind instruments. He played, sax, flute. He also played the bagpipes. So he didn't know what a didgeridoo was. And I said, it's an Australian, it's just a carved out of eucalyptus tree. And, he's like, I could probably play that, right? And I said, well, first of all, where are we going to get one? And I did some research online, found a local person that taught didgeridoo and made didgeridoos. So we called him and he had a CD of music and some lessons, a DVD of lessons. And so he learned it and played it on live television.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay, last question, Deb, and thanks so much for your time. This has been great talking to you.
Oh, this has been a pleasure.
What's the best piece of advice that maybe somebody imparted to you or you learned along the way?
Believe it or not, the first piece of advice I ever got when I was starting in a business was just be nice. Be on time, be nice. And you'll be fine. And that, I think that's still true to this day, to just, the way you treat people, the way you talk to people. And I think that's really important.
Thanks for listening and being in my inner circle. Remember, if you have any questions or comments, you can send them to questions@bobbyosinski.com. You can also learn all about the latest in music, audio, and production news when you sign up for my newsletter at bobbyosinski.com. There you'll also find out about openings for my latest online classes and special events. That's bobbyosinski.com. To listen to other episodes of Bobby Osinski's Inner Circle, go to bobbyosinski.com and select the podcast tab, or go to bobbyoinnercircle.com, where you can find it on Apple Podcasts, Apple Music, Mixcloud, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Deezer, TuneIn Radio, Radio Public, and Podbean. At bobbyosinski.com and bobbyoinnercircle.com, you'll also find a sign-up form for my newsletter and for alerts for new podcasts. This is Bobby Osinski. I will see you next time.